This is The Waycast is a podcast where we recap every Star Wars episode as it's released on Disney Plus. This is your spoiler alert, and you have been warned. Hi everyone, welcome to another edition of This is The Waycast, the Mandalorian only edition. I'm Sarah Edwards, the resident Star Wars writer at Boardwalk Times and still currently in my Bad Batch Depression era.
I am Giovanni Delgadillo, a columnist and podcaster at Boardwalk Times, excited for Star Wars Celebration this weekend.
And I'm Joaquin Fernandez, columnist and podcaster at Boardwalk Times, and also still reeling from the Bad Batch finale.
So it's the first week where we're just in Mandalorian mode, and I will say, after an incredibly heart-wrenching finale of The Bad Batch, Star Wars really threw sad Sarah a bone with this episode. I really liked it. The cast, star-studded. The plot, phenomenal. The music, amazing. Like, overall, this was a great episode.
So, I've seen it now twice, and I also got a report from my sister, and we all had the same kind of line of thinking, where I was like, you know what? This is pretty goofy. But it was so goofy that I was having a great time. Like, the amount of times I was laughing at the absurdity of the situation, I'm pretty sure that was all intentional too. I was like, this is amazing. Like, it's like you're saying, we had the traumatizing, the dark with the Bad Batch, and now we get the goofiest, most alien, wacky Star Wars imaginable. Like, take the cantina scene that they've been trying to recreate for ages and turn that into an entire episode. That's what it felt like. It was, oh my god, so goofy.
Yeah, I would agree. It was pretty goofy. I liked seeing the return of the B2 battle droids. I thought it was cool, especially was it 2 weeks ago we got the clones, so I think it's cool to see like more like droids and clones. So, and you know, the cameos are pretty nice, and especially like the one at the beginning, I don't know, Jack Black, he was funny. I thought he was actually a really fun addition. So overall, it was a fun episode. It was more like a side adventure. So
it was definitely a side adventure, but it was also absolutely essential for the storyline. Like, I feel like Mandalorian has really taken a Rebels, it's really taken a Rebels turn where, yes, we'll have some fillery episodes, but they still advance the plot and they still really matter. Also, yes, fantastic casting. I want to know who thought to bring Miss Queen Lizzo and Mr. Jack Black himself in this episode. Whoever they are, deserve a raise. I have a massive crush on Lizzo, so just seeing her in the most regal, amazing role possible is all I could have asked for. Also, she is known to be obsessed with Grogu, so the fact that Grogu jumped right to her and was kind of with her the whole time, I cannot imagine how much she was fangirling on set.
I feel like that's one of the main reasons they invited her on. They were like, you know what, if you're that big a fan of Grogu, why don't we just give you a role in the episode? Why don't we make something fun here and then pair you with Jack Black, of all people, one of the most fun like actors on the planet. And you could tell he was having a blast with it, just being ridiculous and being like, yeah, I'm in Star Wars, and you know, live up to it.
What was nice is that today was also the release of the Mario movie, so I thought it was a nice like, because he was Bowser, so I was like, this is a cool like, I don't know, Jack Black day, I would say.
Yeah, I was gonna say, this is Jack Black's day. What's today? We are recording this on April 5th. Today is Jack Black's day.
This
also
is amazing.
It's fantastic that they just got these two super extremely well-known actors who really haven't had any official affiliation with Star Wars. Come on, like, me being a Lizzo fan, like, unless you're a Lizzo fan, you wouldn't know that she is a huge nerd. She loves Marvel. She loves Star Wars. So to me, it just makes perfect sense that she was in Star Wars. She is a big fan of this stuff. And I thought her part was just fantastic. I think she should have a whole movie, or at least a few episodes going into, you know, how they got this way, which I want to go into. I really like how this world that we're on feels so different from some of the other city worlds, quote unquote. Like, this felt so different from Coruscant.
Yeah, this was kind of a troll for a lot of people, because isn't the trailers the shot where they're coming into the domed city and everyone thought it was like Mandalore from like ages past or something?
They totally trolled us with that.
Yeah, and so obviously it wasn't like Mandalore at all. It kind of reminded me of a few different science fiction worlds. Like, I know some people are like, oh, like Blade Runner is an obvious one because of neon. It's like anytime someone sees neon somewhere, they gotta say it's Blade Runner. It was like Coruscant-esque. There was a little bit of different flavors in there. Cloud City, for example. I thought it had some parallels story-wise to iRobot, except obviously not nearly as like robot-centric, I guess, as that story, obviously. obviously, but I thought that was pretty fun. So I don't know. I thought it was a really cool location, and I like the lore around it, the world building, just the amount of aliens. There were so many aliens in this episode. Like, I was going down my list of like things, notes I was taking while watching it again, and I'm like, there are so many aliens. You have the frog aliens, you have Rodians, you have the Quarrens and the Mon Calamari, which was at the beginning of the episode. And I thought that subplot was also really funny. That set up the tone for like the entire episode. And there were also some aliens that didn't feature in the actual episode, but were in the concept art. And one of them was one from Star Wars Resistance. Me and Zach have talked on this podcast before how they're bringing things from like every era of Star Wars imaginable into this series. And even though it wasn't in like the final cut or anything, in the concept art, one of the aliens, I think the race is Gozo, was gonna be in this episode. So yeah, there's just tons of crazy wacky stuff everywhere. And we haven't even gotten to the droids yet, which we will get to later, because there's many of those as well.
Yeah, I thought it was cool just seeing like it was a new civilization. And yeah, you would say it was a lot like Coruscant, I would say. But I think in a good way. I think it was different enough. And I feel like the society, it was cool to see, I guess, like a dependent society on the droids. So it was almost like, yes, like you said, iRobot, or like the droid become human, or they're like sentient battle droids. So I thought it was nice to see that play out.
I want to go into the storyline more. So I know Star Wars is a sci-fi show, but to me, it never really felt like it worked with the genre sci-fi, because it was so dramatic. It was so emotional. And I have this personal feeling that a lot of sci-fi stuff doesn't tend to get as that emotional. So this episode, I feel like, truly brought out those sci-fi elements with all of the tech, all of the living in that futuristic city kind of stuff. And even just the plot with the droids. Like, I feel like there's so many sci-fi novels based on the fact that a droid or a robot is used to serve the humans, and then they malfunction and we have to end the program. So this was a great throwback to a lot of sci-fi novels that come out that have to deal with cyborgs and robots. Another thing I want to say is the droids in this episode, it was great to see them back in live action. This is probably the first time that they really looked menacing and dangerous. Like, they looked really tough, and in the prequels they just looked kind of like weak.
It's funny though, we're talking about this, because there, now that you mention it, there's a lot in the episode that's very tech based, and we get little things that feel more like Star Trek. Like, I have a friend who's complained recently that Star Wars doesn't focus on the species, like the aliens, as much as Star Trek does, where Star Trek's very nerdy and it's like all the different alien races have like a very distinct purpose or like abilities or something. And here we get at the beginning with the Quarren lady, she has her little water tank, I guess, to like, you know, breathe for a little bit and soak in, and then it disappears. I thought that was really cool. I assume that all the other guys get tanks of their own, like instead of bunk beds, they just have tanks they can just chill out in or something. So that was really cool. And the way they were presented, I thought, was amazing. I think this is the best the Quarren and the Mon Calamari have ever looked in live action. Obviously, I think the Quarren was a mix of practical and CGI. Like the tentacles felt like CG, but the rest of it was very much real, like makeup, prosthetics. And then the Mon Calamari guy, obviously we've had a lot of those. I thought they just packed a ton of detail into this guy. And they even referenced the Clone Wars in a way when they talked about the Quarren and Mon Calamari alliance, which we get to see all the way back at the beginning of season 4 of Clone Wars. So that was really cool. Like those little alien relationships. And then on the actual planet, we get the Hyperloop, which is also very cool. I was like, oh, Hyperloop is very common in sci-fi, and that's not something we've seen in Star Wars. Like, we just saw trains in the Bad Batch, and on Coruscant we see flying cars and stuff, but we've never seen like a Hyperloop of sorts. I thought that was also really cool.
Again, following my not my theory, but my observation that Star Wars focuses more on the drama rather than the sci-fi, which I think is why I love it so much.
It's like George Lucas said, it's a space opera. That's what he wanted out of it. And you feel that. And so it's interesting when something like this comes around, as goofy as it is, and it does feel a lot more science fiction, which I think you could argue technically Andor was, but that was more of like a drama. Like, you know what I mean? It focused more on like feelings and espionage than it did on like science fiction stuff, despite having lore heavy scenes with a ton of like referential dialogue and stuff. So yeah, I think this is the first episode of Mando that we can say focused more on tech in like a funny way. It feels weird to say the word tech without thinking about the Bad Batch. So tier.
I would say Andor is a spy drama, and this episode of The Mandalorian is a sci-fi spy, or a spy-fi.
Like a detective, like yes. A detective story. You know what it reminded me of a lot, especially when they were working on figuring out what's going on? It reminded me of like a side episode in The Clone Wars where Ahsoka and like some other character are like investigating something. Like very early in this show, they have that little arc with her and Plo investigating. I can't even remember anymore. It was like something to do with the underworld, and they're investigating who did it, like the assassination or whatever.
It was similar. The Boba Fett episodes.
Yes, exactly. Yes, thank you. When he was a kid, that's what it felt
in because of the we see like the battle droids. So I feel like it's a like a neat Clone Wars connection there. I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it felt very reminiscent of a like this could have been a live action Clone Wars episode if the Clone Wars was live action. This one easily would have qualified and fit right in, and I just really liked it. I thought the music choice was very different than what we've heard for The Mandalorian. I really liked that they went on more of a techno beat or techno vibe for this. I feel like it made it feel more of like that spy-fi we were talking about, that spy drama. It really fit in. I thought it just worked so well. I really have no complaints about this episode, if you can't tell.
So there are a couple things that I can point out because you talked about the music, and of course I have to come out here and mention it. So a lot of the electronic stuff near the end is very much associated with Bo-Katan. She has three motifs associated with her now. This like electronic, almost, I don't know how to describe it, like crashing or like almost like whining or something. And
yeah, I know
that's
what
like
you mean.
Attack mode music. And then she has what used to be like bass guitar, bum, 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 bum. And it still plays. And then she has another theme that's more regal, more hopeful and heroic. And that one has been playing all season. Like that's a new motif that they invented for this season. And I pointed it out to Zach a few episodes ago whenever they're rescuing the foundling, and it plays constantly whenever Bo-Katan was on screen doing anything like heroic. So in this episode near the end, we hear all three of those motifs clash together, and then they even mix it in with the Mandalorian theme literally right at the end. I thought that was so brilliant. Wow. I'm over here like freaking out whenever she's fighting Axe Wobes. The music was very much her theme, except they threw in a lot of like percussion and recorders to make it more exciting. I don't know. I thought that was a really cool little musical tidbit from the episode. The only other musical tidbit I have is that and this is in the subtitles, quote unquote, classical music. I thought that was so hilarious. Like you have this little intro to Welcome to Plazier 15. And it's like super cheesy video game-esque classical music in quotes, like Mozart, except with like video game sounds, like 16-bit or something. So I found that really charming, and it fits the vibe of like Jack Black and Lizzo. So I really like that. I thought that worked really well and did get a chuckle out of me a few times in the episode, because otherwise the music is very intense. So
completely blanked on what I was going to talk about next. I'm so sorry. Oh, I feel like the show has quickly transitioned on who the Mandalorian is. You know, in season one, in the beginning, the Mandalorian is Din Djarin. That's who we're focusing on. But I feel like as we've gone into season three, the Mandalorian that we want to focus on really has been Bo-Katan. I mean, she's really dominated much of the storyline, and I really like that. I like that Din has kind of taken a back seat, because when we think about it, Din's storyline is kind of complete at the moment. Like, he has Grogu, he's training Grogu, and, you know, he's just going to keep doing whatever. And whereas Bo-Katan's mission never really was completed, I feel like she always would get closer and then it would drop off super quickly. So I really like that Din is kind of taking a back seat for now, and we're just getting more of Bo's character. And it's funny that you talk about her different motifs. I feel like that's reminiscent of the different phases of Bo that we've seen. So like, I feel like we have Clone Wars and Rebels, Bo-Katan, you know, she's just trying to do an uprising. She's a totally different warrior. And then we have early Mandalorian Bo, who's, you know, just trying to survive. She's going along with it. She's just trying to make money. And now we have purposeful Bo-Katan, where she's like, okay, I found what I need to do, and I'm going to start focusing back on that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. In fact, I think, in all honesty, Bo-Katan is the best part of the entire season for me so far. Like, the more I think about it, her character has gotten the most growth. Katie Sackhoff is having the time of her life, and like everything about her is more important. And so I'm just kind of surprised that in the marketing, like specifically the posters, literally if you go on Disney Plus, the main poster is Mando holding Grogu and like flying around, and I'm like, that's not at all what's happened this season. So I find that really bizarre that they even like that feels weird to me, because I've seen some complaints, and this is kind of true, about people saying that Mando taking a backseat isn't necessarily a problem, but the fact that all of his like advancement from the previous two seasons feels kind of like wasted, specifically the end of season two, because, and we had talked about this at the end of season two, you expect a conflict between him and Bo, and then by the end of this, it's like, oh no, actually there was going to be no conflict, I'm just giving in, which is what he kind of wanted to do anyways, because Moff Gideon was like, oh, you can't just hand it to her, and obviously he gives it back on a technicality. So it's like, okay, like, don't get me wrong, I think having Bo-Katan be this like main character, and that she is completely honorable and not salty at all, I thought that was really nice. Like, I mentioned that back on the pod for the second episode of this season, that her taking the Darksaber, she gave it back to Din. Like, she wasn't like, oh, I'm just gonna take it from you because you were incapacitated. And I was like, oh, that's so honorable, and I'm glad that they're going with that. It's just kind of lame that he just kind of like, oh, okay, this is yours now, I guess, because the story demands it. And so he never got better at it, because I had completely forgotten until people had pointed it out that there was that whole scene in Book of Boba Fett about him training with it, which is like, I mean, I guess the point of that scene now in this context is, oh, he sucks at it so hard that he doesn't want to use it anymore. Like, instead of I want to get better and become like the ruler of Mandalore, he's like, eh, I don't feel like it. And so he just gives it to Bo. He just wants to grow with Grogu. Like, that's that's pretty much the summary of what's going on here, I think.
I think Book of Boba Fett, it's funny, he kind of took over that show for like,
oh,
like
absolutely,
the last third. So it's, I guess maybe it's fair that his show got a little hijacked by Bo-Katan. Like, maybe it's, I don't know, karma, because he kind of did, that was just the Mandalorian 2.5, which I guess that could have been a whole season on its own. But since that happened, they've had to readjust. And this is why they're doing like the Bo-Katan. It's a different plot. So I see the complaints, but I feel like it's where the story is naturally has to go. And I think it's actually going to be strong. It's going to be interesting to see Bo-Katan finally become that leader that was teased in Rebels. We never really got to see. So we actually get to see her become like the leader of the Mandalorians, which has been building up all the way since Rebels.
Mando hijacked a bow and then got re-hijacked by a bow. When you think about it, he hijacked Boba Fett and then got re-hijacked by Bo-Katan. I just noticed that now. I'm not going to lie, I feel like they're building up a conflict between him and Bo, because I really like that we've gotten them closer together, and a lot of people are starting to ship them. And at first I was like, no, I don't see it. But the more I see them interact, I'm like, okay, I could see it. I don't think that's going to happen because Star Wars just hates romance now. But I could definitely see the writers establishing this budding friendship, romance, little fling, only for the very end for there to be a conflict. Like, there's always something that derails what the good that's happening. And I think some kind of, I honestly could see Din somehow taking the saber back accidentally. You know what I mean?
You know, now that you're talking about this, I don't know if you listened to the pod last week, but me and Zach were speculating about it. And I pointed out to him that in that episode, they framed Din and Bo so close to each other constantly. And in this episode, there was a very similar shot at one point. And I was like, So yeah, like, you're not wrong at all. I think that's exactly where they're going, or at least they're trying to like hint at it. And I made a prediction all the way back in the second episode, which changed, and now I'm changing it back to that, where I said I think Bo is gonna try to rule Mandalore like as a real ruler, and then Din is gonna take the Mythosaur and be the Mandalore, like the warrior king, basically, like like, you know, in the Avatar movies, the blue people one, the Na'vi, that they have the, I forgot its name, but that, like, the main character rides, like, this big banshee, and they call him the Turok Makto, I think is the name, and he gets to be, like, the big guy, even though he's not, like, a chief or anything, he's just the dude who rode the biggest monster, basically, and I think that's exactly what they're going for here, where, like, she can still rule Mandalore, while Din has, like, this higher-up position because it's obvious that he has like a, he has a thing, and this is a great part of the episode, of dealing with creatures and other alien species in like a more respectful manner. Like you see that dichotomy between him and Bo, where she's very like, oh, like I just want to get everything done, and he's way more diplomatic. But then when it comes to droids, it's the other way around completely. He just like trashes on them despite, you know,
weird how he still
lesson.
Hates droids after IG-11. I thought he would have gotten over that prejudice, but I guess it always sticks in him, I would say.
But I mean, you look at how he treated that one droid that was supposed to help him on Mandalore, and he was like, no, IG only, IG only. So like, I think IG definitely proved itself, but proved itself to a point where Din is like, you and you only. And he's
only
like,
you. But you know what's funny? This is something I noticed on rewatch, because I'm pretty sure no one has pointed this out. Why is R5 on this mission with them? I don't know if you guys noticed. He's literally sitting in the ship with them
right
at the beginning. I completely did not notice that until I rewatched it. I'm like, okay, literally, why is this droid here? Like,
I
guess he's just stuck to Mando now because of Peli, but like, and he wouldn't stay with the covert. But at the same time, it's like, he literally served no purpose in the story. There's no reason for him to be there other than like, oh, he's with Din now, I guess. And so I was like,
I didn't
like,
even see him. That's crazy.
Exactly. See?
I did notice it, but honestly, I guess I'm just kind of used to some kind of droid always being in the presence of a ship. Like, I'm used to the Jedi always having a droid. You know, with Bad Batch, we're used to having Gonki, and Gonki really didn't serve much of a purpose outside of being really cute and Wrecker's dumbbell. So,
oh my God.
I don't know. I guess I just didn't really notice it because it was like, yeah, droid.
That's a good point. That's a good point. That's fair. That actually is pretty funny, because I guess the real argument to be had, and this isn't necessarily a complaint. It's more of like okay. So obviously a lot of people talked about this in general. This season is completely random. Like we've had a million random plot points that don't feel connected at all. Whereas like you watch a normal serialized TV show and it's like, okay, from one episode to the next, it's just going to carry the same plot line over and you're going to have like a plot thread. For example, what happened to the whole IG-11 thing? A lot of people expected the droid bar when they saw it in the trailers to be where he gets the part for IG-11. But no, it's a droid bar, which, I mean, the droid bar rocks, but like, that's just like a random storyline. So one of the biggest things that no one has talked about really is, what is the point of having Grogu here at all besides being cute? Because if you think about it,
Disney, probably. Like,
yeah, like, right?
He's marketable.
It's such a
so.
Business he move. He's he did cute. Nothing. Like he's just there to be funny and cute. The only thing he's done this season is save Din, like, once.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, I was thinking about that because of the knighthood scene where it's like, wait a minute, I just realized this is the first episode where they're completely separate from each other and we don't get any screen time with Grogu at all until they reunite. So I was like, that seems a little bit counterintuitive, you know, like to the whole narrative. So I don't know, like they're just juggling so much at once here with the New Republic. Because here's another thing I forgot as I was watching the episode, even on rewatch, I was like, wait a minute, what happened to all the New Republic stuff? Like we're about to end the season in two episodes and all
the
New Republic
stuff.
Yeah, like where's Moff Gideon?
But where's Moff Gideon? What's Dr. Why do we care about Dr. Pershing? Like, you're right. I mean, I think that's always been my gripe with Mandalorian after, like, once we got into season two, is they introduce so many plot points and we don't really go anywhere with them. Who knows? Maybe they'll get resolved, but, you know, starting with Grogu, he is marketable. I had the same question when we were going into season three, like, what purpose is Grogu going to really serve? Like, he ages different than humans, so his training as a Mandalorian is going to be much more difficult because he doesn't age the same way as these humans, whereas Jedi, it was a little different. You know, he would just kind of get paired with a species master who can kind of compete with that, with the way he ages. Like, I love that Din is trying to make Grogu a Mandalorian, but outside of a marketing standpoint, it doesn't really make sense to have him there other than
imagine him in like
really
a little
cute
helmet, like with the ears and everything.
That'd be a hard helmet to put on.
It would be. I've always imagined it like, okay, eventually he's gonna have to wear a helmet, but I don't know how that's gonna work exactly.
Exactly. I mean, I wonder if they're building up to, my thinking was that with when they reintroduced Dr. Pershing is that he would try to recontinue his, or pick up his science again with Grogu and want to hunt Grogu. That storyline makes sense to me of making him a bad guy once again and being like, there's only one species that I need and there's only one left. But we haven't really done anything with Dr. Pershing. I don't really understand what the episode episode he was in served. I don't know what purpose it served, and it doesn't seem like we're gonna find out unless they somehow resolve everything in the next two episodes.
So I just came up with a mega conspiracy theory of putting my tinfoil hat on again, like I did for Book of Boba Fett. I was just thinking, because we're talking about all these plot threads and all this stuff, and I was like, I made a note right here because I was reading through my notes, and I was like, wait a minute. One of the notes that I wrote was, they repeat the exact same dialogue from when they first arrive on Plazir right before they go to talk to Axe Wolves. It's the exact same conversation, one-to-one, in both scenes, where Din is like, hey, you need to go talk to Axe Wolves and stuff. And then she's like, Bo-Katan's like, no, Axe Wolves is their leader. They won't listen to me. Things are different.
You're right.
They have this exact same conversation twice. And at that point, I'm thinking, it's almost like this plot line on Plazir had nothing to do with the Mandalorian plot line. Because if you think about it, the only important part of the episode is the Mandalorian stuff. That should have been like the beginning of the episode, and then the rest of it be whatever is going to happen in the next two episodes, right? I think at some point in the shuffle of whatever happened with Book of Boba Fett and COVID and whatever, and trying to stick Grogu back in the season and all this other stuff, like conspiracy theory stuff, this was originally going to be a completely self-contained episode that had nothing to do with the Mandalorians. And this is where they would have solved the IG-11 thing, where it's like, oh, we have this Ugnaught planet. They're experts at droids, and I have spoken, and we get to see Din, you know, use his skills that he learned from Queel. Which, quick little trivia bit, because I didn't mention this last week because I didn't know, the Ugnaught pirate that was on Gorian Shard's ship was dressed like Smee from Peter Pan, and I can't believe
slipped
my mind. Yeah, I'm just like, that is so funny. I know I sent that to you guys, I think, on Twitter, but I can't believe that's such a like obvious detail that we went missed when talking about Ugnaughts. But yeah, I really think that's where they were going, because it's like, well, flashback to season one of Mandalorian, Queel is who fixes IG. Like,
yeah,
like there's just so much there where I'm like, you know what I mean? Like, this makes me think that they're probably going to resolve the IG thing within the next episode or two with these Ugnaughts, especially because they got the key to the city and they can just use that as an excuse to do stuff now. So I don't know. I just like, I'm running through all these theories in my head, but that's what I think happened.
I have a question for that though. Why would he need IG? He already found the Mines of Mandalore.
Right?
So why, if they bring back IG,
yeah, I don't think they'll bring it back. I think that's just like, they're just keeping the R5. So I don't know if they'll even bring back IG-11 at this point.
I mean, unless they bring him back and try to spin it as we need him to retake Mandalore with us. But I mean, when you think about it, like Din's purpose for going to Mandalore has been fulfilled. He really has no other obligation to go back to Mandalore except to help Bo. So it's like, well, there's a lot of plot lines that I think they just, you know, dropped off and we just may never know what happens to them.
Exactly. That's what I mean. That's why I'm having like this conspiracy theory moment, because even people pointed out he accepts R5 almost too quickly, and it's like, no, I only need IG. And then he's like, okay, I'll just get this crappy one. It's like, I guess it's because he trusts Pelly, but at the same time, like a part of me is like, something's off here. Like,
yeah,
that's another one of those things where I'm talking about like jumbled plot lines, because you guys are right. Like, he has R5. He has no need for IG. That's why I'm like, I don't know. There's like a part of me that thinks that this storyline got sandwiched here and it wasn't supposed to be, and it probably would have been an earlier episode, you know? Because every single episode, even the ones that people could call filler, have had something in them that are important. For example, Bo-Katan saving the foundling. Now the armorer wants her to reunite Mandalore. Bo-Katan saves Din. Now Din can give her the Darksaber without conflict. Like, there's little things in each episode that are important. It's just so bizarrely put together that it doesn't really gel correctly. It's just really hard to explain, you know? I just found that really weird. Like, this whole season has been super weird.
I agree. Like, it's definitely been like I don't have too many complaints, but it does feel a lot different than the past two seasons.
Yeah.
It's a lot more like Book of Boba Fett, where you could tell it's more, I wouldn't say the writing's like bad, but it's more a little unfocused.
Which yeah.
I think focusing on Bo-Katan has been like good for this season, but for other storylines and characters, it's a little hard to like really figure out where it's going. Like, a lot of people don't even know about, like, okay, they're setting up the First Order, New Republic stuff, and that's cool and all, but like the main like plot of the season, we really don't know at this point. We know it's going to be Bo-Katan retaking Mandalore, but like, we still don't know like really what that's going to be about.
I don't think we're going to see them retake Mandalore in this season. I think you said we only have two episodes left of this season. I think the last episode is going to end up with, great, we have our fleet, we have what we need, we are ready to retake Mandalore. And then the final scene is, who, I don't know, maybe someone's already been, maybe Gideon's been trying to retake Mandalore. I don't know what purpose he would have to have Mandalore. I don't know what his connection would be, but maybe that's what they're building up to, is like some huge cliffhanger that's like, what? Oh my God. But I don't think the retaking of Mandalore is going to happen this season. I think it's going to be the very beginning of season 4.
And that's a very good way to put it, because both me and Zach had the same thinking. We think this season is going to end on a downer ending, which is mm-hmm. why they've been saving Gideon for this long. It's like, you can't just have this villain in the dark and then have him show up and not have like some big cliffhangery ending like Bad Batch did. I think that's exactly where they're going, because this feels almost too hopeful. Another thing that's kind of weird is that if you think about it, the whole thing with Bo-Katan and her arc, at least between Rebels and now, is essentially been the same thing again. Like, she gets the Darksaber from someone else again, and then the scene where she's supposed to reunite all of them again. So I'm just like, you know what, here's another conspiracy theory of mine. I think that they know that not every Star Wars fan has watched all of the Clone Wars and all of Rebels, which yeah. is why they've done little things here and there, specifically Jon Favreau, where he's like adding random Mandalorian lore that didn't exist before, just so that people watching the show can get these rules. And one of the things that's created is like, okay, well, let's do stuff from Rebels, but like a lot of people didn't watch that. So, oh, Bo-Katan, who is that character? Oh, she's from Clone Wars and Rebels. All right, I don't care. Like, they're not going to go watch the show. And so now we're just having to basically repeat story points so that people watching The Mandalorian can get the same gist, instead of like, oh, here's Bo-Katan, she rules Mandalore, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, they want the show to be about Mandalorian conflict, and the best conflict they Jon Favreau could come up with is the Darksaber, I guess. So I don't know. I just find that really interesting, that it does kind of worry me a little bit for Ahsoka, but not really, since that's Dave Filoni's thing.
That worries me too, because if they're doing this for Mandalorian, my worry is that they're basically going to retell Rebels in Ahsoka episodes, and it's going to kind of do the same thing of like, well, people love Ahsoka, but maybe they haven't seen Rebels, or maybe they haven't even fully seen Clone Wars. Maybe they never finished it. So I really hope that's not the case.
I don't know. I think that's too, because like Ahsoka's gonna be almost like Rebels season 5,
pretty much. Yeah. So it doesn't really make, if they just kind of retell everything, then that doesn't really make sense, and it would just further cement my love for Bad Batch, because Bad Batch, I really liked that they didn't basically retell the Clone Wars. I don't know. I don't want to say I've been disappointed by live action, because I really enjoyed the ride of the live action shows, but I feel like the animated ones know that they are niche. They know that only a certain type of Star Wars fan is going to watch them. Thus, they don't really have a reason to have to go back and re-explain things. And I think that's why I really like it a lot more. Like, they have the room to be edgier. They're not necessarily over-marketed to bringing in new Star Wars fans. And I love that we have new Star Wars fans. We have people who The Mandalorian attracted that may have never been a fan before. But at the same time, I feel like I don't know. I don't want to send hate to new Star Wars fans, but it's also like, I don't know.
It's a lot like the MCU, I would say. Like,
yes,
The Mandalorian's kind of like, it's more of like, I wouldn't say casual, but it's more of like the show that brings like people that are not familiar with Star Wars together. And then you go into the deeper shows, like you would say like Bad Batch or Andor, and those are more for the like longtime fans. But I mean, Mando has had some deep cuts too, but I think it's just at this point they're trying to make sure they keep the casual fan base, so just so it doesn't like, there's a lot of, I guess, a lot of like viewers, or also like lose them if they get too deep into the lore and stuff.
Because season 1 was great for that reason, and that it brought new Star Wars fans, but you didn't have to know anything about Star Wars to be into the first season. It was completely different than some of their normal storylines, which is why so many people liked it. So I don't really like that we're trying to like re-explain a lot of the universe.
Yeah, it's like Jon Favreau mentioned the MCU in an interview too, when he was talking about things he learned about building a universe. And I'm like, okay, because my thing is like, the MCU is very specifically that, and Star Wars, while being a reflection of reality, is supposed to be a little bit deeper and more fantastical and stuff. So I guess with this specific season and everything that's been going on, you can kind of see like the more Marvel-y thing, like what we're saying casual, it's kind of the same way where it's like, okay, well, The Mandalorian is like the Avengers essentially, and we're just gonna have all the Star Wars elements in here for people regardless of whether or not they watched everything. everything. And so that's why we have this like whole thing with, oh, well, now we have to re-explain things from Rebels for people who don't know what that is. Or like, Ahsoka is very important, but people who didn't watch those shows have no idea who that is. And so it's like, she's just a random person to them. And so I don't think they're going to necessarily redo Rebels again, where they're like, oh, now we have to show Sabine and blah, 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 like doing the same things or having the same character arcs. I kind of think Dave Filoni really is just going to make it season 5. And so
I don't know.
It's like, mainly I think our like main nitpick here is essentially Bo-Katan's storyline. Cause it's the only one that's like completely repeated, where it's like, okay, like we basically reached the same point we did at the end of Rebels season 4, where she ruled Mandalore and Sabine handed her the saber and everything. So it's just kind of like, you know, I mean, another thing we haven't mentioned yet, because we talked about cameos, was Christopher Lloyd, which I thought it was great to see him. He's in his 80s and he's still rocking it. He gets his little aggressive separatist rant. I was like, I always like to see Doc Brown, you know, around here. But yeah, it was cool. And I don't know, I thought that was fun. And the little game that Grogu cheats at, which I assume is why he was knighted, because I didn't really get that at first, it was cool. Like all that stuff with Christopher Lloyd, because it's like another extra tidbit from the episode.
A nice Count Dooku reference when he was mentioning Count Dooku, and like he almost mentioned Anakin too before he got cut off.
Yes, you're right.
He did, yeah.
And this is the first episode where they name drop the Clone Wars straight up, because Bo-Katan says blah 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 the Clone Wars, and I was like, oh, it almost like, I know that it's a part of the lore and stuff, but it almost took me out of it for a second where I'm like, whoa, did she watch the show? Like,
I mean, when you think about it, like a lot of the live action has really kind of ignored what's happened during the Clone Wars. Like, we have completely forgotten about Satine. Like, Satine had so much of an impact on why Bo is the way she is. And Satine just doesn't exist. She wasn't, no mention of her was in Obi-Wan. No mention of her has been in live action. It's like they want to erase her. But I feel like because Satine wanted to lead a different kind of Mandalore, I think it's so important that she's mentioned, because essentially that's what led to Mandalore's downfall. Is she tried to make things peaceful. Bo did not agree and basically brought in a bunch of war criminals to take it over and destroy it. Like, I feel like there's this whole part that we're just forgetting. What I know, a lot of people don't like Satine, completely understand why, but it's how Mandalore got to how it got to the way it is. It's so important, and we're just glossing it over completely.
You are absolutely right. That is something that we have not talked about at all on this podcast, and it is essential to Bo-Katan's character. And that's one of those things where, like we're saying, I feel like the reason they're avoiding that is they don't want to confuse people. For example, you're watching Obi-Wan and suddenly he has a flashback to Satine, and then people who only watch the prequels are going to be like, who's that? Like who is that? You know what I mean? And so then it's like they're trying to make sure that not everyone is completely lost, especially in the shows that are more marketable to like all Star Wars fans or like all audiences. And now that you mention this, I'm like, wait, yeah, no, that's an essential part of Bo's character. But yet she mentions her father, who we didn't even get to see.
Makes an appearance whatsoever.
It doesn't make any sense. So I'm like, I don't know. That's a bit curious. Like there's things here and there. That's why I've said since Mando season 1, I know I'm going to get a ton of hate for this, I really don't like Jon Favreau as a writer. I don't know why people were saying he was so good just because he was bringing in stuff from all the Star Wars eras. Like, I like that, and I really do like The Mandalorian, but as a writer, I'm like, this guy is not it. Like, he does not have the storytelling chops, which is why they had to bring in Dave Filoni to be like the Star Wars figurehead to kind of like guide the ship in a way. And I feel like Ahsoka's gonna be a lot better, a lot more focused. I'm like, fingers
crossed.
They say
the next two episodes of Ahsoka or of Mando are directed by Dave Filoni or Rick.
They're directed by Rick, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, Rick. I mean, I like Rick. I like his episodes, but I don't know. If Dave Filoni's directing one, that'd be kind of dope too. But it's like, for me, being like, because we're all fans of animation here and everything, and it's like going from something like The Bad Batch to this, you get like the quality whiplash in like the writing. And same thing with, like, I hate to use this example because it's so pretentious at this point, is like Andor was on such a high level, like, that it kind of ruins your perception in a way. Because it's like I said, this episode was so fun and goofy. Like, you cannot compare it to Andor. Andor is completely different genre. Like, it's supposed to be serious, but it does kind of suck that, like, oh, everyone trashed George Lucas for the prequel prequels because he's a bad, like, he's terrible at writing dialogue, which is true, but at the same time, it's like Jon Favreau is just okay. He's just very average, mediocre, and so that's why we're running into all these problems. You know what I mean?
Again, though, Jon Favreau voiced a character who was in this era of Satine being the ruler and when Bo-Katan is really first introduced. I mean, he starts the conflict. He's the one who introduces us to the Darksaber. So, like, I guess that's his deal. Seriously, he's made so many voice cameos that I don't know. I think just because I love the Clone Wars and I love animation, I'm kind of just like, really? I also, going back, I have no shade to Rick Rodriguez. I just feel like Rick Rodriguez episodes are not very story driven and they're just all action-y, which is why I'm like, okay, hearing that he directs the next two episodes.
Oh, sorry. No. It's this is gonna sound so actually.
Rick Famuyiwa? How do you pronounce his name?
It's Rick Famuyiwa.
Sorry. Never mind.
No, Robert Rodriguez is who you were thinking of. Yeah, no, if it was Robert Rodriguez, I would have checked out of the season right at the beginning. Yeah, no, no offense.
Cut out the part about Robert Rodriguez. Yes. I mixed him up with one of my old professors whose name is Rick Rodriguez.
That's amazing.
Okay, like, ignoring that.
Yeah, no shade to Robert, but I'm also like, he directed stuff that I don't really like necessarily. Yeah. So I don't know. It's like we're saying about the Marvelification, where like Star Wars is very lore heavy, and because Mando is so not that, and it's more accessible, you can kind of feel the problems that brings. It's like people said, it's like they're playing with their action figures, and then that's literally Jon Favreau said that himself. It's like, oh, he did. Like, I'm playing with my action figures, and I'm like, we can tell, because that's exactly what it feels like. It's like, here's my little Mandalorian action figure going on little adventures, and like,
it's almost like a video game. Like, people voice Mando's been like a video game. So this episode especially, they go to the main, I guess, Jack Black, and he's like, okay, well, you first need to do this side quest, and then you gotta and then I'll give you what you want, and then it's kind of like in a video game.
Then the main plot happens for the last like 5 minutes basically.
Mando's always been like that, but I think it's been more prevalent this season, so
it's definitely a side plot. And I don't know, I guess I'm also surprised that, like, I mean, from a marketing standpoint, if we're trying to bring in new Star Wars fans, it does make sense that Favreau and Filoni were paired up, because Filoni is going to try and do everything to please the already fans, and Favreau is going to tone it down and be like, okay, new fans don't know what that means, even though it's like, you could go back and watch, or you could look it up. I don't know. I guess I wish that they set up Star Wars to be like, cool, you know what this is now. Do you want to learn more and go back? But I think that's just me, because when I really like something, I really get into it. And maybe this is just for a more casual fan.
So, oh my God, Omega Brain, just like, this is exactly what's going on. Like the agenda, basically. So everyone complained about how last season was just set up for future spinoffs with all the characters, like, for example, Ahsoka showing up and everything.
Yeah,
I feel like that was entirely done. I know that it was entirely done on purpose to market those shows, because it's like you're saying, the fans aren't getting, like, well, the casual fans aren't getting any reason to go back and watch. Like, maybe Disney Plus will recommend, like, after the show's finished, hey, did you know this other series is out there? Like,
yeah.
But the thing is, in a non like business centric world for these shows, they would just announce Ahsoka as a sequel to Rebels and just leave it at that, and she would never show up in The Mandalorian, and The Mandalorian wouldn't feature the New Republic, it wouldn't feature Bo-Katan, and it would just be what the first season was, essentially. Everything kind of changed for that with the Darksaber, but yeah, turning The Mandalorian into like a hub for like all the shows in this specific era, which I guess it works, it is very Marvel like where it's like, oh,
they announced they're gonna do like character? They announced, like, was it Filoni said that we're gonna make it like an Endgame level event with Ahsoka with Rangers. I don't know if I feel like it's canceled, but they're gonna do that with Rangers, Ahsoka, Book of Boba Fett, and Mando all crossing over. So I agree with you, or it's almost like a Marvel. I guess that's what Favreau learned from being a Marvel.
Yeah, I am a little worried about that. I've been thinking about it since they said they were gonna end with a mega movie. At first, that made me super excited because it means like, oh my gosh, 2.5 hours of straight angst and straight emo. But the more we've been been getting into the writing of these shows, the more I'm nervous about it, to where it's like, this is just going to be a giant fan service. Like, this won't really serve any kind of purpose. We're just going to be fangirling about like, oh my God, they made an appearance and they reunited. So I don't know. Again, I think this just goes back to how much of an animation person I am with Star Wars. And when it comes to live action, Andor is probably the main exception. Andor, phenomenal. Like, it exceeded my expectations because I didn't have any. Whereas the way we've gone with live action, these live action shows are now just feel more kind of fan servicey and side quests rather than advancing their own storyline.
You know what's crazy about all this is I just remembered that we're getting The Acolyte, which I think is the only original series that isn't based on anything currently like in canon, because it's in the High Republic. And I think that's going to be our next like Andor-esque series, because they're saying it's going to be like 8 episodes long, like 8-hour-long episodes or something like that. And it's going to be very lore heavy and stuff. And all the talent behind it sounds incredible. Like I looked at the writing staff and I'm just like, whoa, okay. Like the showrunner, I love her. Like she showran the first season of Russian Doll, which if you haven't seen that, it's brilliant. And so I'm like, okay. And she's a Star Wars mega nerd. So it's like, okay. And there's just little things like that where it's like those kind of shows are somehow becoming more interesting than the ones about, like, for example, Lando, or like, oh, we want to do a series about, like, for example, General Grievous. Like, I'm just making this up, but like,
oh God, I
wish. Yeah, like stuff like that that we want to see, I feel like is going to be more disappointing than just going into new stuff. You know what I mean? It's like,
absolutely. About Andor. I would love, like, I'm excited for the fact that we're getting a Lando show, but the only thing that makes me not excited is it's going to be fan servicey and it's not necessarily going to, it's not going to be as, I don't want to say not as cool, but like, I feel like these characters are not going to get the story they deserve. And the actor, the phenomenal actors that we have coming in to do these shows is not going to be, they're not going to be used as fantastically as they should be cast or as they should be written.
Here's a good point to that. I just thought about this while I was rewatching the episode. We have not seen Din take off his helmet once this entire season. And that leads to this whole controversy about Pedro Pascal essentially voice acting, because it's mostly Brandon Wayne and Latif Crowder under the helmet, which is not a bad thing at all. But that kind of, if you think about it, almost influences the story, because it's like,
is that
one of the reasons why they had him go do the stupid, oh, I need to bathe in the water so I can be a zealot again, which they even finally said out loud. They finally had Axe Wolves, someone just call him a zealot, because I'm like, yeah, no, like there's just a lot of like character regression, especially in this episode specifically, that's like jarring. It's like I said with Zach, I almost feel like they jumped the gun with season 2 and ended it way more ambitious than they should have. And it's
absolutely,
they should have waited to do endings like that later, or they should have committed entirely to Grogu being with Luke and then him and Din reuniting way later or something. But anyways, that's like conversation for another day. I feel like what we're talking about right now is essentially the main complaints everyone has about this series, specifically season 3, all rolled into one, because it's like, I don't know what even I can say to like, oh yeah, I expect the last episodes to do so and such to fix it, because I honestly can't think of anything. I'm just like,
yeah,
good luck to you is what I'm saying to the staff. Like, I'm sure it will look nice. But
I mean, with that, we can go into final thoughts. I mean, I've pretty much said what I've needed to, which I thought was an excellent conversation. Is there anything else that you guys think that we should mention? I think we covered it all.
Yeah, it was basically everything. It was a fun episode, but I feel like going into these next two episodes, the last two episodes, there's a lot to cover. I think it's definitely going to end on a cliffhanger, and we're definitely going to get season 4 to resolve a lot of these storylines.
I do have a prediction for next episode now that I think about it. I think next episode, as much as we'd like it to be two episodes of like craziness, is going to be a setup for the finale. Like completely, it won't have like any big plot points. It's going to be a lot of, okay, let's unite the Mandalorian clans. They're probably going to prediction butt heads at first, and then by the end of it, Bo's going to say the cheesy line she said in this, where it's like, Mandalorians work better together, or whatever she said. And I'm anyways, that is my prediction for next episode, beyond like maybe some New Republic stuff. Some people had this like ridiculous expectation that Sabine was going to show up in this episode because Bryce Dallas Howard was directing it. And I'm like, where did you get that assumption from? But anyways, all I'm going to say.
Well, we'll see whether those predictions are true or whether we just go into another plot line that doesn't get resolved. we will see. But with that, thanks for listening to another episode of This is the Waycast, the Mandalorian edition. For more Star Wars content, head over to boardwalktimes.net and follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Boardwalk Times. This is the Waycast is a Boardwalk Times production, produced and edited by me and Giovanni Delgadillo, and music by Kevin MacLeod.